On this week's podcast, I'm offering a special show. It's actually a celebration of life of the great Barbara Marx Hubbard, who made her transition from this life to the next just a few days ago at the age of 89 years young. What a powerful woman. I had the joy of interviewing her twice on this radio show, and also in meeting her in person, and during that time, with a small group of people up in Chicago in 2014, even had a private conversation with her. And what I was struck by her, much like Maya Angelou, she was so present with not only me, but with everyone she met with, and so kind. She didn't believe in her own press clippings, all great as they were, but she was a very humble lady, as well as brilliant. So what you're about to hear is my first interview with Barbara. We taped it in 2013. We're going to be talking about a couple of her books. So, Barbara, we love you, and we love the work that you did on this earth, and you're flying all through the cosmos right now. Here's my interview with Barbara Marx Hubbard. Barbara Marx Hubbard has been called the voice for conscious evolution of our time by Deepak Chopra and is the subject of Neil Donald Walsh's book, The Mother of Invention. A prolific author, visionary, social innovator, evolutionary thinker, and educator, she is co-founder and president of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution. She's the producer and narrator of the award-winning documentary series entitled Humanity Ascending, A New Way Through Together and partnered with the Shift Network as a global ambassador for the conscious evolution movement, a shift from evolution by chance towards evolution by choice. Along with Shift, she launched the Agents of Conscious Evolution training and formed a global team to co-produce a global multimedia event entitled Birth 2012, Co-Creating a Planetary Shift in Time on December 22, 2012, a historic turning point event awakening the social, spiritual, scientific, and technological potential of humanity. In 1984, her name was placed in nomination for the vice presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket, calling for a peace room to scan for, map, connect, and communicate what is working in America and the world. She also co-chaired a number of Soviet-American citizen summits, introducing a new concept called CENCOM to foster synergistic convergence with opposing groups. She's a fellow of the Club of Budapest and has received an honorary Ph.D. in conscious evolution from the Giordano Bruno Global Shift University. In addition, she was awarded the first doctorate in conscious evolution by Emerson Institute. She has established a chair in conscious evolution at Wisdom University Graduate School and is a member of many progressive organizations, including the Evolutionary Leaders Group and the Transformational Leadership Council. She also co-founded the Association for Global New Thought and the World Future Society. She's been the recipient of several awards, including the first Peace Builder Award by the Peace Alliance in Washington, D.C. Her books include The Hunger of Eve, One Woman's Odyssey Toward the Future, The Evolutionary Journey, Your Guide to a Positive Future, Revelation, Our Crisis is a Birth, An Evolutionary Interpretation of the New Testament, Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential, Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence, 52 Codes for Conscious Self-Evolution, and Birth 2012 and Beyond, Humanity's Great Shift to the Age of Conscious Evolution. It's a joy and honor to have her on today's program, and she's joining us from her home in Santa Barbara, California. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
It's a thrill for me to finally have you on this program. It's quite an honor, actually. And I'm excited about everything that you're doing. As a matter of fact, last year was a very busy year for you. You released two books, and I'd like to talk to you about both of them. But let's start with Birth 2012 and Beyond, okay?
Yes. Well, as you know, that was the big year of the potential end of the world in the Mayan calendar, and
yes,
all the fear and concern that people had. And then there was Birth 2012 on December 22nd, which was really to celebrate what's working, what's emerging. So Birth 2012 and Beyond was written for 2012 and beyond, the awakening to the first age of conscious evolution. And it's all about the story of our birthing this new culture. And it has my story in it, and then it has my 12 welcoming committee members, like Jack Canfield and Michael Beckwith and Lynn Twist and all these wonderful folks who themselves are part of this emerging culture.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole book is about how do we celebrate what's really working so we can move toward it.
Yeah. In the beginning of the book, you share your planetary birth epiphany. And this is such a powerful experience that helped shape what you do today. Can you share this experience with our listeners?
Yes. You know, so often you get these sudden inspired insights, epiphanies, expanded realities. And mine happened, I've been reading Reinhold Niebuhr on the subject of community, and he was quoting St. Paul's famous statement, all men are members of one body, and everyone is unique, and everyone is needed. And I just asked the universal question, what story could we tell in our generation that would give as much to humanity as the story of the birth of Christ?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of him as the story of this birth of this child in a manger that nobody knew except the wise men. What birth story could we tell? And with that, I got what I call an expanded reality experience. I became like an astronaut, and I was also a member of planet Earth, along with everybody struggling to coordinate, running out of energy, feeling the pain through the media, like a living system that we are. And then I saw a few frames ahead in this very rapid movie of creation. I saw us feel empathy for each other. Then came spirituality, where we began to incarnate the essence of spirit rather than projecting it onto outside gods.
Mm-hmm.
And masses of people began to speak in their own language, their own inner experience of the divine. And then I felt the healings that go on in a field of love. And towards the end, I felt the Buckminster Fuller scenario of the different organs of our social body, like health, education, energy. They're all organic functions, and nature / spirit coordinated our social body.
Mm.
And with that coordination of our capacities, along with our love and spirituality, the system awoke to its own potential. And I called it a planetary birth.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was like a planetary mystical experience, except it was real, because we are running out of energy. We are struggling to coordinate. All of those things are true. We are joining together in empathy, and we haven't yet coordinated all our parts, but if we could break down very quickly, I believe we can coordinate what's emerging very quickly, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had a precognitive inspiration of what the planetary shift could be if we have a gentle shift rather than a violent one.
You talk about the end of your vision when you say, deep in my heart, I heard these words, our story is a birth. It's the birth of humankind as one body. This is concept you visit in both of the books that we're going to be talking about today. The concept of our birth as one body. Can you talk a little bit more about this?
Well, the analogy is very obvious. In the biological birth, you have this little organism growing until it begins to outgrow its mother's womb, and there's a signal that crisis, danger, it has to be born or the mother and the child will die. I think the same has happened on planet Earth. First, we had to have an Earth and life and animal life and human life, and then intelligent human life came in and began to populate and pollute and gain the capacity to overgrow the womb of Earth. And we've hit that. We've actually hit that capacity now, and we are overgrowing the womb of Earth. So the signal is going out to millions of people. Wake up. Stop growing in the old way. Start evolving. Become more connected, more sustainable, more connected to the earth, to spirit, to each other, and maybe to the universe itself. You're being born as a universal co-creative humanity.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually true.
Yeah.
It's when the mythical and the sort of the mystical and the evolutionary come together with scientific evidence that one phase of growth is over and another phase is beginning, And we have the ability to be conscious of this as a species, so we can either consciously evolve or allow ourselves to destroy our life support system and civilization itself.
Yeah. Yeah, you also talk about the chaos point and how we've reached that point in our culture's story. Yet you talk also about those who are waking up, as you said, and I think now is a time, it's wake-up time, waking up to love, purpose, compassion, connectivity, and the desire to cooperate. You call them cultural co-creatives, much like Paul Ray. Can you describe these cultural co-creatives that you're talking about?
Yes. Well, it's anyone, every one of us who feels a deep inner impulse to be more creative, more loving, and to realize more of our full potential self. I call it the impulse of evolution. If you look at the billions of years of evolution as a spiral, you'll see, you know, here's the universe, earth, life, animal life, human life. Every turn on the spiral, there's a jump in consciousness and freedom through more complex order. So that inner impulse in us now, because we're going through a crisis of the birth of a new era, of a new human, are feeling more of the impulse, and I call it vocational arousal, yearning, heart's desire to co-create. And we spent all of these years on survival and procreation for our species, really.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the 60s, 70s, 80s, we began to see you can't continue to grow this population and survive. And they say it might hit 10 billion, but that we've already overgrown Earth's capacity.
Yeah.
So this huge shift from procreation toward co-creation and co-evolution, it's more than just a lifestyle change. I believe there's an internal impulse waking up that in the past we might have called spiritual or projected onto a religion, but in fact is evolution becoming conscious in us, as us.
These are auspicious times, aren't they?
Right. And my recent course, the one I'm teaching now, is called Generation One Intensive. Now, what is Generation One? It's all of us on Earth now are the first generation to consciously face extinction of our culture or evolution to a new phase. That's new. It's new for the species. It's certainly new for a whole generation. You know, there we are facing the new.
Barbara, there's a section early on in this book where you talk about learning the meaning of depression and how that was a pivotal lesson for you. I love what you share about Maslow and how he found that everybody who was successful, creative, joyful, and productive had one thing in common. They were doing chosen work that they found to be both intrinsically self-rewarding and of service to others. So many people, I think, miss this in their lives. No wonder we have so many depressed people in our society. You talk about how depression is a signal for something. So can you talk about that for a moment with our listeners?
Yes. I was a housewife in Lakeville, Connecticut, with five children. And I loved my children. I loved my husband. But it wasn't really my life purpose. And I didn't know that. So I got depressed.
Yeah.
And the Freudian analysis of depression was, of course, you're sublimating and there's something wrong and how do we get back to normal? And then I read Maslow and I realized there's a whole new norm.
Mm-hmm.
He called it the self-actualizing person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he said, everyone who is self-actualizing has chosen work we find intrinsically self-rewarding, which is to say vocation, life purpose. And I realized that even though I was a very devoted mother and wife and editor of my husband's work, I hadn't personally awakened to that unique calling. And so I saw that depression is often a pressure to express more of who you truly are. And instead of trying to get rid of the depression by any kind of substance, you ask yourself, okay, what wants to emerge in me?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you ask yourself that in a really deep way and start looking for what attracts you to create, even if it doesn't seem possible in that moment, just say yes and explore it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't it exciting to see somebody wake up to the true nature and calling of who they are?
It's the most wonderful thing. And you know, I'm teaching a lot of women over 50 on my classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now saying we've entered regenopause. Menopause
that.
Is no more eggs. You are the egg. 50, 60, 70, 80. There's a whole generation of women with creativity so great that it is actually shifting their, I believe it's regenerating. That's
yeah.
why I think at 83, I feel, actually, I don't feel related to age.
Uh-huh.
It's not that I feel young. I just don't feel related to age because your creativity isn't age related.
Yeah, yeah.
It really isn't. And so the people who start getting turned on by life purpose get that vitality. And often, I mean, usually there's no label, no school, and no job, and no pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the women, and this is true for men as well, but women particularly because we didn't used to live this long, or we had a lot of children or a lot of grandchildren, but here we have fewer children and longer lives. And so this is a wake-up generation that is very precious to humanity right now because we're at the threshold of breakdown or breakthrough. And I think that while there's a lot of emphasis on the young and how they're already in the new era, which
mm-hmm.
is true,
mm-hmm.
I just want to add to that the generation of women who are living much longer lives who have this sense of unconditional love for the unknown world.
Oh, yeah.
Like you have unconditional love for the unknown child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When you're pregnant, you don't know that you don't know what that baby's going to be at all.
Yeah.
But there is that ability to love it even if it's very painful and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So the feminine love in here is your program is about love. That feminine love is really important.
Well, now more than ever, I believe.
It is. So I'm speaking of love also in terms of creativity and life's purpose when you're over 50.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You start to fall in love with your creative expression and your work
yes.
and your gift.
Yes.
And that starts to regenerate you, and also you begin to be a what I call a pioneering soul.
Yes.
And you can be a pioneering soul at any age. But it really is a lot of fun to be 83 in this way because people have said to me, Barbara, you have ruined my retirement plan because, you know, I meet people who are like 65, and I met a lady the other day. Oh, well, now I'm, you know, I've done so much and I'm just about finished. I said, what? And she said, boy, you're right. And look at you. I don't dare say I'm finished anymore.
Yeah, 65, they're just a kid.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's literally 65, 75, 85. So this is, and you know, longevity is increasing in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a big deal. And the men have their version of this mm-hmm. when they don't feel they have to be the old structure of male.
Yeah.
The protector, the dominator, the warrior, but feel they can tune into their own essence, their own creative expression, and say yes to that, even mm-hmm. if it means they don't have the same kind of job or the same kind of success in the existing world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned your age 83, and I'm thinking about your immense body of work that you've done so far in your life. But it strikes me, being an observer, that you're ramping it up. Do you sense a quiet urgency about things right now?
I am ramping it up because of the planet's ramping it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just been reading this book called The Great Disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And the great disruption is Earth is full. It can't keep growing this way.
Mm.
It's very much the birth image because the baby can't keep growing.
Mm.
So the problem then becomes that you have to do something about that if you want to survive mm-hmm. and if you want to grow. So the whole thing is about growth,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but growth of a new kind. And so I'm 83, but growth of a new kind is happening inside me.
Yes.
So I've actually a really good example of regenopause.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You're modeling what you're teaching.
Exactly.
Yeah. In your book, Birth 2012 and Beyond, you talk about how important it is to connect with others who recognize the best in you, and even discuss the importance of creating a resonant core group or evolutionary circle. Tell us a little bit about what these groups might look like.
Well, it's two or more gathered.
Yeah.
Where the person that you're with, or a small group, is resonant. That means resounding, resonate, mm-hmm. and have a experience of love, acceptance, caring, where you feel that you can share your deepest impulse, your creative impulse, your feelings, your upsets, not so much as a therapy group, but particularly about what you feel is emerging in you.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think of them as conscious evolution circles where the people are becoming aware of what's evolving in them. And usually you don't have a profession for that. You don't have a job for that. You don't necessarily have a church for that.
Mm-hmm.
So the small group becomes the field in which you can discover who you are becoming.
Okay. And it is important to have other people also who believe in who you are and support who you are and encourage that.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. In the earlier segment, you all used a phrase. You talked about vocational arousal. In the book, you talked about using vocational arousal and supra-sex to co-create. Can you tell us what you mean by supra-sex?
Yes, I can. Well, for one thing, I don't mean super sex.
Yes.
Supra sex means that the drive to procreate mm. is evolving into the drive to express yourself and co-create.
Mm.
So that in procreation, whatever the lovers think they're doing, nature wants us to join that sperm and egg and create a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those little sperm are amazing. I call it the story of the noble sperm. I mean, you get hundreds of thousands of them to hit one egg.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a mission.
Uh-huh.
They have a definite mission. But if they're not on that mission, because the woman is either in postmenopausal or doesn't want to have a baby, well, first of all, sex itself changes because it's not just for reproduction. It's more for recreation, enjoyment, and love,
mm-hmm.
which is fine if it's good sex.
Mm-hmm.
But supra sex is when you want to join genius. When you have a creative urge and you're looking for someone who needs what you want to give, and where you need what they want to give.
Mm-hmm.
So even right now, like between you and me, you desire to communicate people mm-hmm. who are experiencing love and emergence.
Yes.
I also am a communicator who loves to communicate this. So in this moment, we are co-creating.
Mm.
And when people develop deep partnerships in co-creating, then it moves into joining genius.
Okay. Okay.
And that's a very, very deep commitment. Like joining genes is to have a baby is a very deep commitment. Joining genius usually means that there's some work that's coming out of it. Some project is emerging, and I have found in my life that the greatest joy is joining genius.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're having supra sex.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the way the world's going to evolve, by the way, because we have the crisis, so we have to act on behalf of the dangers. But if we don't have the love and the joy of joining, we won't have the energy just to respond to crisis.
Yes. Barbara, in Chapter 3 of the book, you talk about being inspired by the work of Teilhard de Desjardins, and you share one of my favorite quotes from him, one that inspired me in the creation of my company, Journeys Fire, and that quote is, "Someday, after mastering the winds and waves and tides and gravity, we will harness for God the energies of love, and then for the second time in the history of the world, humanity will have discovered fire." You talk mm-hmm. about how this is finally occurring now. Please elaborate on this.
Well, you see, the spread of love, I believe, really starts in one respect beyond the personal love, through the spread of empathy and feeling with each other. Like when there's a hurricane, when there's a tornado, when there's an oil spill, anything that happens, we all feel it.
Yeah.
That's totally new because we have a new nervous system, which is the media and the internet and the social media. So the empathy is, if something's happening in, let's say, Egypt right now, I'm feeling the tragedy. Not only of the destruction of life there, but of the pain of everybody who is disagreeing with one another. And so I'm feeling empathy for Egypt. Now, here I am sitting in Santa Barbara feeling empathy for Egypt, telling you about this, and I'm sure thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are feeling for Egypt right now. We're feeling for the hunger. We're feeling for the pain. We're feeling for the endangered species that we never even heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is huge in terms of growth of empathy. And then what happens is you find that that empathy also gives you inspiration to create. So we start to find our own path of self-actualization. And empathy is a big trigger for it because we want to act on behalf of something we care about. Not just abstractly. So it's more than just I'm joining an organization or I'm sending money to a charity. And it's more like I'm activating my own internal impulse to create.
Yes.
And that's when you start to become a cultural co-creator. And I use the word, Paul said cultural creatives, and I use the word co-creative because I feel we're creating with spirit. We're creating with the process of evolution. We're creating with the impulse that drove the mystery story of from you know, the Big Bang to the present. We're creating with whatever did that is now in us, more ever more activated.
I like that. I like that definition. And it's a nice reminder, too. Of what's really
taking place.
It's a
wonderful reminder, and it's very energizing. And what it does, too, is it gives you the sense that whatever part you're playing is part of a great purpose. A species-wide evolutionary purpose. If you're doing, you can be a mother, a gardener, a fisherman, a futurist. But if you're doing it with that feeling of self-rewarding action that's giving your gift, then you're part of the conscious evolution of humanity.
Yeah, you also in the book talk about the need for a new myth. Why do you feel that this is so important?
Well, you know, cultures are totally built on myths. And somebody was criticizing me for being impractical the other day. And I said, well, you know, the world has been changed by totally impractical statements. And I'll tell you two of them. The first one, Christ is risen.
Ah.
Look what that did. It changed the world.
Yes.
Here's another one. All men are created equal. There was no equality whatsoever. And basically, very little of it really now. But it's true. So I added a third impossible statement, which is we're being born as a universal species. That is actually more realistic.
But
then all men are created equal or Christ is risen, but it actually is in the same sequence as those great mythological statements. There have been ones like in the Jewish tradition, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. Or I think it was Isaiah's, behold, I'm making all things new. Don't you see? Or Jesus saying, you will do the works that I do, and greater works will you do. Wow. The story of the resurrection and the ascension, nobody knows exactly what happened there. But look what that story did.
Yeah.
So I think the myth of our time is the myth of the birth of a co-creative, co-evolving species.
Well, those are great examples because it does spell out the importance of myth and how we do need to be rewriting some new myths and creating some new ones.
We do, and I think there's a lot of emphasis now on what they call the new story. And the new story, for example, Brian Swim wrote a beautiful book with Tom Berry called The Universe Story. And he did a scientific story of cosmogenesis, how the cosmos originated, how for billions of years it created more complex life. And then in my work, I said, yes, and let's put ourselves in that story. We are actually the universe in person here. This is how the universe shows up in a planetary species.
Yeah.
And you see, the new story then starts to give purpose to your life. And we lost our old stories, I believe, during the Second World War and the atomic bomb and the environmental collapse. And it looked like the great Renaissance idea that a progress through knowledge, it looked like that wouldn't work. Because here were the most sophisticated nations in the world destroying at an unprecedented degree, like Russia, England, France, United States, Japan. Just horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then people, I was in Paris in 1947, 48. That was at the time of existentialism, nihilism, extreme materialism, neo-Darwinianism, that there's no meaning, no purpose, no direction, no spirit, no nothing but matter and error. Well, that for a worldview, that's very depressing. I then discovered there's a new worldview, which is the universe is alive with intelligence going to ever higher order. Now, that story then activates the people who understand it to participate in being creative.
We do need to be careful about what we're believing, what we're telling ourselves on our own thoughts. My guest today is Barbara Marx Hubbard, best-selling author, spiritual pioneer. We've been talking about her book, Birth 2012 and Beyond. And now, Barbara, I also want to talk about another book that you've recently published called Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence. And this book goes through the birth process from ego to essence, or the birth of the more evolved human, what you call a universal human. You define the universal human as one connected through the heart to the whole of life, a person awakening from within by a deep heart desire to express and give his or her gifts into the world. And you also say that those of us drawn to becoming universal humans are actually spiritual social pioneers building a more compassionate and co-creative culture that could welcome the kind of humans we are becoming.
Yes.
Tell us more about this evolved human.
Well, the evolved human, if you take what I spoke of in Emergence, it's the shift from your ego to your essence. And the ego is a separated self that has more or less tried to survive and has done a really great job, but is could destroy the world now, because if self-centered consciousness with this power is destructive. So what's happening is that, at least this happened this way to me, and I wrote it in my book and it's being taught all over the world now, is that when you receive higher guidance, higher inspiration, you might think it's a higher being, a higher presence, a Christ, a Buddha, whatever, you be, what you do is you put your attention on that experience and it comes into your heart as a frequency. And gradually you recognize it as your own essence. Because whatever high spiritual being attracts you, you're attracted there by your essence. So by attention, the frequency of, let's say in my case, I was so attracted to the life of Jesus. So I would put my attention on that. But what started to come in was my own higher self. And then that higher self came into my heart, and I realized it was me. And then I was able to I did some really serious meditation, like 3 hours every morning early for 21 days, just putting my attention on the feeling of that self coming into my own heart. And what happened was that the separated self, the local, the egoic self, relaxed. Mm-hmm. It got rid of that compulsiveness. Mm-hmm. And it really wanted to be one with its own essence. It's bringing God within. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
And it becomes your own essence, your own essential self.
It's beautiful, beautiful experience. And I wanted to go back to your phrase, cultural co-creatives. Do you see this group just growing and growing more and more now?
I do. I actually think that Mother Earth is giving birth to a new kind of human.
Uh-huh.
And there have been great examples of this type of human in the past, but not nowhere near the hundreds of millions that seem to be cropping up now, which is to say that, you know, if you think of the shift from Neanderthal to Homo sapiens sapiens, uh-huh. there is no reason to assume this is the last model of human. And I think what's happening with the awakening of ourselves as part of this planet, the awakening through media of being connected to all other parts of our planetary body and each other, maybe the awakening of our internal spirituality, the awakening of our capacities to destroy and create like gods, mm-hmm. all of those awakenings are creating a new human. And that human has to recognize the meaning of its power. And the meaning of its power is its conscious evolution. Mm. The meaning of our power is to connect with each other, restore the earth, free the people, explore the universe. Mm-hmm. We're being born as a universal species. That's mm-hmm. what I think.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about your book, Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence, now, and you talk about 10 steps to becoming a universal human. The first is to enter the inner sanctuary, and in this section, you open with your experience and struggle with this step. Can you share that and how you managed to overcome some of the hurdles you experienced?
Well, when I realized that this higher self that I'd been, I'm a journal writer, so I was always writing in my journal, this higher guidance, and when I realized that it was actually my own essence, mm-hmm. then I had to create a ritual. So I called it the inner sanctuary. And that I put a white light in my visualization of this inner sanctuary. Very early in the morning, I got up and I put some flowers in front of me and some music and a candle. And I was able to be in that space, but the local self would distract me and would start wanting me to do some work, to make some phone calls. It's still the same way. That local self never stops. Mm-hmm. And I had to be very disciplined in order to attract the local self to stop distracting me and become attracted to its own higher self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And gradually, in that after that stage one, which I'm calling the birth of oneself as a very, very young universal human, then comes infancy. Like, you don't even know who you are yet. Mm-hmm. So that's where you need to keep remembering your own essence and spend time in that inner sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes childhood, and that's really where the two or more in the evolutionary circles, it's like going to evolutionary kindergarten.
Yes.
Because uh-huh. we're very young around being able to love one another as ourselves.
Yes.
We're very young about being able to love ourselves as our own essence. I mean, most people do not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the teaching of the shift from ego to essence, my sister Patricia Ellsberg has been co-teaching, and now she's teaching it on the Shift Network herself. And people absolutely love it, and they form these core groups who... And they share with each other their own experience of their own essence.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, when you do that, what happens is the essence itself substantiates.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned kindergarten. I've heard teachers such as Richard Rohr and even Ken Wilber say that if they were to evaluate our society right now, we're probably about at kindergarten level.
Yes.
There's a lot of room to grow, isn't there, ma'am?
Well, you see, if you look at the evolutionary spiral for 7.8 billion years or something like that now, uh-huh. first of all, that's deep time past.
Yeah.
It took a long while to get here. If we put our present moment in that cycle, we see it moving toward an emerging future very fast, mm-hmm. because we're in one of those shift points on Earth. Mm-hmm. We're in one of those quantum jump points of destruction and evolution. So the fact is that I believe there's a whole vast community of co-creative humans who are not a new church, they're not a new religion, they're not an organization, they're not a nation state, they're people who are evolving.
Yeah. We are living in very exciting times, and it's a joy to have Barbara Marks Hubbard on today's program. Right now we're talking about her book, Emergence, The Shift from Ego to Essence. We'll have more of our conversation right after this break. Welcome back to the program. I'm talking with Barbara Marks Hubbard, the voice for conscious evolution, I believe, spiritual pioneer. We're talking about her book, Emergence, A Shift from Ego to Essence. And Barbara, in this book, the second step is contemplating the glory of the beloved. I love that phrase. And in this section, you say, we are not and never have been separate from the source of our being. As we cross over from ego to essence, we recognize that we always have been one with the great creating process itself, or God. This is a big step for some. Can you share some thoughts on learning to, as you say, incarnate the divine?
Well, I was in a way very fortunate because I grew up with no religion. Uh-huh. And my father was Jewish raised, but totally agnostic. So I never had a traditional religion. And when I began to discover this deeper life purpose and the story of evolution, my real awakener was with Teilhard de Chardin that you quoted.
Yes.
And he was a Jesuit Catholic paleontologist, never published by the church in his lifetime. And he basically discovered God in evolution. And he said, take away God, take away Christ, give me matter. Because matter coming out of the universe is such a miracle, and out of matter comes multicellular and animal and human. And then he saw, I believe, the next stage of evolution. Mm-hmm. He saw the noosphere, or the global brain, or the whole social media, Google, Internet, Facebook, a complex of, you might say, social media connecting through love, mm-hmm. like you and I on this phone are actually, we're in the noosphere because you're not here sitting next to me. We're already in that sphere.
Yes.
And we're talking this way to each other, and it is being recorded, actually. Mm-hmm. And so he saw that thinking layer of Earth, noosphere, N-O-O-S, sphere, would at some point get its collective eyes. Mm-hmm. And we would have a collective experience of awakening. Mm-hmm. And that is happening because our nervous system is connecting very, very rapidly with pain, with nonsense, but also with love, creativity, and awareness. And it's really like a newborn baby. Is it going to live?
Yeah.
Are we going to be able to connect our nervous system with love, creativity, and oneness, or not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, who would that depend on?
Mm-hmm.
You and me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the time remaining, Barbara, I'd like for you to talk about something that you addressed early on in our interview. And I happened to get the emails from the Shift Network, Accelerating the Next Evolution. And I've been reading a lot of your thoughts in those emails. And you do talk a lot about Generation One. Can you share more about that for our listeners?
Well, it's my current course on the Shift. Mm-hmm. And I mean by Generation One that we are the first generation of humans, everybody alive, who has faced the realization we could destroy our whole life support system ourselves, mm-hmm. by our own actions, by mm-hmm. growth, mm-hmm. or we could evolve ourselves to a next stage of evolution. Mm-hmm. And that includes every single member, whether you're 8 or 83, because there's no elders on the other side of this that says this is how a planet goes from high-tech, overpopulating, polluting, to sustainable, evolvable. Therefore, we're all in it together. Mm-hmm. And we are the first generation in the history of this planet who has known it could render itself extinct or evolve itself. Yeah. So it's the great wake-up call for the maturing of ourselves outside of this kindergarten into becoming at least young co-creators.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the environment and the dying of our species of animals on this earth tell me that it needs to be wake-up time now.
It absolutely does. And I was just reading this book, The Great Disruption, mm-hmm. in which the author is saying the earth is full. It is already we're overshot the limits of this planetary growth. Hmm. This is according to him, and that we're going to be facing tremendous climate change and global, mainly environmental crises as the waters rise and the weather changes and people, food and water is threatened. It's the most dangerous and global threat that ever has existed. And so he feels this crisis is natural in the sense that we didn't know, and what we did know, we weren't willing to do.
Yeah,
because it affects economic growth.
Mm-hmm. And if we watch the news at all, it's unfolding right before our eyes.
So you have to interpret this as the crisis of the birth of a new global culture.
Yes, exactly. This has been a joy and an honor to have you on today's program. And Barbara, can you share your web address with us, please?
It's www.evolve.org.
Wonderful. Barbara Marks Hubbard, thank you so much for shining your light in the world and for sharing your time with us on today's program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it so much.
Barbara writes, "The urgency of our global crisis is causing people to wake up all over the planet. It's dawning on us that something creative, something new, is pressing within us to emerge." She is such an inspiration. I'll have some final thoughts, but first, here's one of my favorite Tina Maliah songs.
This is the sound of one heart starting to hear. This is the sound of faith stepping out of fear. Oh, the journey of one soul's passage through time. And oh, this is one lone dreamer learning to fly. Through the anguished wall. can see is there. See it clear as the blue. And oh, this is one small part. Here is my gift to you. And you.
And of course, this podcast is not possible without two of my favorite sponsors, and that is Mary Grace Pinella with Still Point Chiropractic and Natural Awakenings Magazine.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings Magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
In closing, here's a quote from Neil Donald Walsh that's featured in Barbara's book, Birth 2012 and Beyond. We're not simply advanced chemical expressions of physical life. We're spiritual expressions in physical form. We are indeed one with God. We are divinity expressed. What we've not understood, the understanding of which will change everything, is that we've been going after the wrong thing. We've been trying to produce peace, prosperity, opportunity, happiness, and love for thousands of years, yet our sights have been on the wrong goal, which is why we've not achieved it. Our highest dreams above will be realized when we self-realize. They will come to pass when we come to know who we really are. The knowing, the expressing, and the experiencing of our highest self is that would be the most beneficial for us to be seeking, and now at last we know this. Thus, it is the shift in what we are seeking that is producing the overhaul of humanity. As we seek this goal of self-realization, all of the other things for which we have so earnestly yearned and unsuccessfully struggled will begin to manifest in our lives automatically, even before we get to our goal, and even if we just start out in the right direction. This is the great promise. We don't have to get there. We just have to head there. Or, as it has been much more eloquently put by another, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added unto you. That's today's program. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And hey, get the word out. Have people come to the website, richardbrendan.net. Subscribe to iTunes. I'm asking you to do that. Thank you very much. I'm also so grateful for my engineer, Thomas Gismondi, and my production coordinator, Angel Richardson. This show wouldn't happen without those guys. And I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Dying to Live.